Welcome to St. Louis on the Air. I'm Don Marsh. Illinois legislators are going into extra innings. We'll tell you why and what's next a little bit later. But first, the story of a historic baseball family with a history that's impressive. I'm speaking of the Molina brothers, our own Yadier, Jose, and Benji, all three of whom played in the major leagues at the same time. They played in 8 World Series between them, all played or play as catchers, perhaps the game's most demanding position, beating early odds, by the way, to get there. The story is detailed in the new book by Benji Molina titled Molina, the Story of a Father Who Raised an Unlikely Baseball Dynasty. As the subtitle tells us, the story is less about the three sons than it is about the father. Benji Molina joins me in studio to talk about that story. Benji, it's a great pleasure to meet you.
Oh, no, it's a great honor to be here.
Congratulations on the book and congratulations on a great career and a great family.
Thank you. Thank you.
You know how beloved Yadier is in St. Louis. He's really found a home here. St. Louis fans just love him.
Oh, I know. When I came to coaching in 2013, I knew he was loved. You know, I knew he was great here. But when I noticed how much you guys loved him here, it was amazing. It was even double or probably triple the realization that for me, how loved he is here. I mean, it's amazing, and I was so proud of him. He's done great, but also he's earned it. It's not like somebody was given to him.
That's, as we were saying off the air, St. Louis baseball fans, they recognize that. They recognize someone who is a leader, who works hard, and who gives 100% every day of every game.
They do, and that's why they're probably the best fans in baseball. It's just because of those things. You know, they realize and they know the game.
You got to know the fans pretty well for that 1 year when you were here as an assistant batting coach, right? How come only 1 year?
I tried to come back with some other job, you know, like doing something else. I was the assistant hitting coach. I was most of the time in the cage with John Mabry, was brilliant, you know, doing his job. But I wanted to do something else. I wanted to be higher. I told them I know they have good coaches and nobody was going to be moved. I was nice, you know, I mean, I was nice to them, and I asked him, I said, hey, can I be a first base or something else higher, mm-hmm. so I don't have to be that much time there and I can help many other people. But they were nice, and they said, no, we cannot do that. And then the Rangers called right away when the season was over. They called and they said, hey, there's a first base and a catching instructor opening. Do you want it? And it was a coincidence because I was going to come back to the Cardinals, but that job was hired what I was looking for, and I was going to be able to teach a catcher. I was going to be able to be at first coaching. And that's one of the reasons why I just stayed there. I went with the Texas Rangers. It was that.
Now you're out of the game entirely and spending more time with your lovely family who is here with us today, beautiful wife and a lovely little daughter. So family is the key to our conversation today, I think, because of your book and your father and your two brothers. You know, I think what's remarkable about your story is if three Major League Baseball players came from the same city, it would be a story. But coming out of the same house makes it all the more remarkable.
I think it was amazing. Our story, not only, like you said, it's remarkable. I think every time I think back and how we grew up, sometimes without food for a couple of days, to be where we at right now. And the little town we grew up in Dorado, it was amazing. And now that we see each other here, maybe Yadi doesn't realize it yet because he still has business to take care of. And when I was playing, I didn't realize it. And my brother now, Jose, who's probably retired. I don't know. I'm not sure what his future plans are. But now when we retire, we're going to realize what this is, you know, and it'll be special.
When you talk about growing up poor, it almost needs a new definition. One of the things that struck me about the book, which I enjoyed very much, by the way, was the fact that you didn't have gloves. What you used were paper bags as baseball gloves. That's how poor you were.
Yes, and we didn't see any better. We never noticed what we were doing. We never noticed like man, I wish I had this or anything like that. That's what we had. And that was it. You know, we didn't question, we didn't ask for anything. The other kids were wearing the same thing, so we never saw anything different. And it made us appreciate life now that we were here.
Puerto Rico sent an awful lot of young men to this country to play professional baseball. Why do you think that is? What is it about baseball in Puerto Rico that, you know, I think of Roberto Clemente. You mentioned many times in your book, one of the best who ever played the game. A lot of Puerto Ricans played great ball.
I think it's for us growing up at that time, maybe not so much now, but for us at that time, it was a way out. It was our ticket out. It was a way for us to make it somewhere and have a goal, have a dream, and then go out there and make some money to help our own family, to have better homes, to have better cars maybe, or just live better, you know. And hopefully what we were thinking is making it to the Major League so my dad and my mom don't have to work anymore because they sacrificed so much for us. They lost so many hours working at a factory and things like that, that we didn't want that. And that's why I said, that's probably what they think about is a way out.
Your dad never did make it out, although he was a great ball player from everything that you've written.
Yes, he was great. A lot of people know the Molina brothers, obviously, in the major leagues, so that's always on TV and all that. For us, he was our hero. He was our guy. He took care of us the whole time. He put food in the table when we needed it. He didn't have a bank account. He lived paycheck by paycheck until the day he died. He did that. So for us, he's very special, a man, and so humble, you know, that people don't understand. But he was so good of a player, he made the Amateur League Baseball Hall of Fame in Puerto Rico the same day we won Game 7. In 2002 World Series, same day he was inducted into the Hall of Fame. But not only that, the Hall of Fame are Little Leagues, which says a lot about him.
You know, a large part of your book comes to the toward the end where you explain why your father never made the major leagues. I don't want to give that away because it's a driving part of the book. He probably should have. He was that good. Was he bitter about that?
No, he wasn't. He was really happy. Sadly, we came to understand that after he passed away, we all thought we were playing for him, but it wasn't like that. But like you said, we don't want to give it away. But he was a very happy man. He was happy working. He was happy teaching kids in Little League. He was happy with what he was doing. I never saw him sad or complaining or anything like that.
Give us some sense of what it was like with him. You lived right across the street from a baseball diamond. That was handy for your family, needless to say. But that was certainly family came first, but the diamond was his pride and joy.
Yes, he was. Yes, he was. He would go out to work from 4:30 in the morning. He'll come back at 4. He'll have a little something to eat, and he put his show on. He always wanted to watch the same show at the same time every day. Then after that, he'll rest. He'll rest like half an hour. By that time, we'll gather our staff because we knew he was coming with us to the field. And he did. He did. He went over to the field with us at 5:15. And then we were there until 9:30, sometimes 10. Then he came back, got something to drink or eat, and did it again next day.
How did he teach you? Was he demanding of you, of the boys as players?
He was a very different coach, and that's the kind of coach I want to be. And he was very understandable. He understood what was the problem. He didn't ask anybody to do more than what they did. And if he saw you not being the MVP of the team, of course, or the fourth batter, he leave you alone. Mm-hmm. He goes with the ones who need work. And that's how he was. He was not demanding at all. He was understandable, you know, like he understands what you did.
But there were times when he was disappointed, and I think a couple of times when he was disappointed in you.
Yes, of course. And when he had to put the foot down, he wasn't afraid. He would tell you. He was big on respect. He wanted everybody to be respectful, not only to people, but to the game. And if you did something wrong, he will tell you. I mean, he would not ask you to do something more than what you do.
One of the things I think was clear in the book are the lessons and the way he lived and the things that he did demand, respect and respect for the game, was that these are characteristics and qualities that would apply more than just to baseball, to just about everything we do as people.
Yes, like I always said, that my dad didn't talk too much. You know, when we were home, he was very quiet. And then he got a couple of Coors Lights in when he was with his friends, and he would loosen up a little bit. But he was very quiet at home. But on the field, he was very, very outgoing, and he was talking, teaching us the game. And the same way was because he thought in his head he was teaching us life through baseball. That's what he was doing, and he did. He taught us respect the game. He respect everybody, among other things, during the baseball. You know, so he took baseball and taught us life, and that's the way I see it.
And how about your mother?
Oh, my mom, very different from him. The yeller, the one that took care of us when we did something wrong, and very loving, of course. My mom, I always say this, and I should back it up because my mom is a very lovely lady. She's here with us in St. Louis, and she's going to be around in the events and stuff. But she was lovely. She was great. And she could be, I always say, if I ever manage in the major leagues, she's going to be my bench coach. That's how smart she is in baseball.
Are you going to manage in the major leagues, do you think?
I hope so one day. That day will come. But you have to be so dedicated to that position. Because it takes years and years and years. And once you're set up and once you want to do it 100%, you should do it, and I want to.
It's a tough life, though, isn't it? I mean, it's very clear from your book. You're traveling all the time. You were a catcher. Your brother's a catcher. You get beaten up badly playing that position. It's a tough, tough thing.
It's a very tough position physically. I knew I was going to get hit 5-6 times a game, or foul tips or something. Now when I got hit 7 or 8 times, I was mad because that was overtime. But it's physically so draining, but also mentally. People don't understand. Like Yadi today has probably to be at the stadium at 12 on a 7 o'clock game. Mm-hmm. 12 o'clock, 1.5 hours on the video, watching the videos for the other team. And then after that, he has to watch the pitchers on the other team, so he got a hit. Mm-hmm. So that part of the catching is a lot tougher than people think, all the mental. And then when you miss, get a strikeout or miss the ball, you didn't bring the guy out from second base to score, you didn't get an RBI, you have to go out there, and you have to be tough enough to block that out and catch a good inning. And that's what people don't understand. It's tough mentally.
We're talking with Benji Molina. He's a former baseball player. He's the author of the book, which I have in front of me here, titled Molina, The Story of the Father Who Raised an Unlikely Baseball Dynasty. We'll come back and continue our conversation. And by the way, I want to let you know that Benji is going to be available on a couple of occasions this week. Tonight at the St. Louis County Library on Lindbergh, across from Plaza Frontenac, there'll be a talk and a signing. It'll be my pleasure to be interviewing him at that time, 7 o'clock at the County Library. And Wednesday, June 3rd at 5 p.m. at Left Bank Books on Euclid. He will be there as well. And tomorrow, Benji, you're going to have the privilege of catching the first pitch. Is that right?
Yes. I always say I'm going to have the privilege of trying to catch the first pitch and see how that goes.
Yeah, I think he'll probably do pretty well at it. Benji Molina, our guest. We'll come back, continue the conversation. If you'd like to get in on it, give us a call at 382-8255. That's 382-TALK. You can send us an email to talk@stlpublicradio.org, or if you'd prefer to send a tweet, do so at STL on Air. This is St. Louis on the Air on St. Louis Public Radio, 90.7 KWMU. Now back to our conversation with Benji Molina. Benji, so much of your book, as I indicated early on, and as we've indicated in our discussion, centers on family. And oftentimes in the book, you would make the connection between family, you and your brothers and father and mother, and the baseball family, that they're very, very similar. How are they similar?
Well, I think it's because of the game brings us so close. I think in families and in Puerto Rico, baseball was number one, you know, like every single year that I played, everybody played baseball. But at the same time, we knew that those kids that were playing with us, they were our family. They were our brothers, too. So that makes all those parents our aunts and uncles. That's the way we saw it. I think that brings everybody together. And that's how that baseball and family relationship comes to play. It's because of those things. You know, you play so many years together with these kids, they become family.
How did you handle it? And I have one specific case in mind when a member or members of the team didn't quite fit in or didn't follow the path that the other players wanted in terms of respect and giving 100% of the time.
Well, usually my dad would pick the guys, you know. We usually have the same guys year by year, but one or two were coming new. A couple of times we had trouble with kids, and my dad would talk to the parents and say, hey, he has one more chance. If he doesn't change, this is not what we're about here, you know, and I don't want any of the other kids learning from your kid this and that. And one example I always throw out there, I know everybody knows Pudge Rodriguez, catcher for Texas Rangers, who's going to be an all-star. I mean, I'm sorry, who's going to be a Hall of Famer in 2017 for sure. He played with us. He played with my dad. And then he threw the helmet because he struck out. And my dad told him, I mean, we don't do that here. But we call it Ivan because by that time it wasn't Pudge. But and he said, all right, no problem, I won't do it again. And then he got a ground ball to first, and then he got thrown out, and he threw the helmet again in the same game. And my dad told him, he was our best guy. He was our best pitcher, hitter, the best catcher, and third base, because he used to be third base. So my dad said very calmly, he didn't yell, he didn't tell him get out or nothing. He just said, can you please take your uniform off and your hat? You put it on the bench, and you can go with your dad. And he went and called his dad, and then his dad got in too. And he said, he's off the team. You know, and we're talking about Pudge Rodriguez, our best guy. We're all looking at each other like, wow, what is he doing? Pudge Rodriguez out. And he got him out. He got him out because of the respect for the game, you know. And that was one thing how my dad dealt with it. But he didn't yell. He just told him very nice. During the week, that was a Sunday. During the week, the dad and Pudge came over and say sorry. You know, it won't happen again. And my dad was like, okay. But that's how we do things here.
Well, I brought this up because you relate in the book about your time with the San Francisco Giants. And Barry Bonds was a bit of a problem in the clubhouse. It was Barry Bonds and then everybody else. How do you deal with that?
For me, it was very easy because I have so many pitchers to take care of. I don't have time to see what Barry Bonds was doing, you know, as much as when I was catching for all those pitchers and trying to win games, because that's what it was all about, just trying to win some games. I saw a few things that shouldn't happen from his part, but I was always so busy that I didn't see many. If you talk to many of the other guys that had time to see, they will say more. But for me, I was worried about my pitchers and asset, you know.
But one player can be disruptive to a team.
Of course. Of course. One guy, this is how funny baseball is, and people need to understand this thing. One guy is not going to win you a World Series championship. Not one guy is not going to take care of it. But one guy can destroy a chance to a World Series championship, you know. I think that's very true. And everybody knows that now that he left, he was the man in San Francisco, and everybody thought that we're going to win 17 championships with him. And they didn't win, and all of a sudden this guy, he left, you know, the best player in the game. He left, and all of a sudden they got 3 rings. I mean, that's amazing. That tells you the team will go farther than one guy in the team.
The making the World Series, getting to the World Series, a dream of all young men who ever played baseball. You and your brothers have all been there. Give me some sense of what it was like and what you were thinking, you know, at the World Series after the humble start that you and your brothers had just getting into the game of baseball. What were you thinking?
Oh, wow. the World Series is the ultimate dream for any player, any player that plays the game. So when it's funny actually. What I was thinking was, don't be the GOAT. Don't be that guy.
I can understand that.
Yeah, don't be the guy that as we all seen, you know, it's sad with Buckner and a couple of guys that have made errors and so sad because their careers are being measured by one error and it's not fair for the guy. But I didn't want to do that. I wanted to do good. I wanted to be okay in the games. I was enjoying them for sure. But also I was taking care of my pitchers and I had my head like 90% into my pitchers, so I didn't have a chance to too much to think about failing but it's in the back of your head, you know, and that's what I was thinking.
You did pretty well though.
Yeah, we did very good. We did very good, and that's a very, very perfect example of all those kids coming together. I always said, if you have 30 kids out there and they can become one out on the field, you're going to have a special season.
But you personally performed quite well.
I really don't. I never, people who knows me, I don't like to talk anything about myself. I like to keep it with me, and I really appreciate the people that think that I did. Obviously, I really do appreciate that. But to come out from me, I don't think it'll happen.
Let me ask you about an issue that a lot of folks talk about with regard to today's baseball, and that is the money. You came, as we pointed out, from a very poor family, a very poor neighborhood, and wound up making some pretty good money, as your brothers did, and many players today are making a lot of money. How did that change you, or did it?
I don't think it did. I think it actually, the only thing that did money was that I could be able to help others with the same money. I helped my uncles. I helped my cousins, my aunts. I helped my mom. I helped my dad when he was alive. And that's the only thing that money does to me. My motivation in my life was my family, my mom and dad and my two brothers. That was my motivation. And that's one of the advice I always give the kids whenever I have a chance to talk to them. Put your motivation where it should be. The motivation of cars, motivation of houses, motivation of having the greatest chain ever or the best Jordan shoes or... I mean, that's not motivation for me and for us. I could tell you, our motivation was our family, and that's why we made it.
But not everybody was like that. Again, as you point out in the book, there were some players who just, they make millions of dollars and they spend millions of dollars plus one or whatever.
Yeah, a lot of guys, they see you. The problem in the major leagues when they start is that they get the minimum, whatever that minimum is, but they are playing with players getting $10 million a year. But the problem is those kids wants to live a life like the $10 million guys when you're getting paid the minimum. No, you got to learn. You got to learn how to live your life to what you have. If you get paid $1,000 a month, live like that. Don't try to live a life of a $1,500 guy or something like that. And that's a lesson.
Do the older players and those who are on that higher income scale, do they mentor the young players in that regard?
At times, yes. Of course, not everybody does. Everybody's worried more about their job. But a lot of them do too. You know, I did. I took my time, and when the flight was a long flight, and I saw the guys watching a movie or something on the plane, I sit down with them, and I would talk about them, how's their life. How's your life away from baseball? And what merit can I help you? You know, I've been through life. You know, I felt like a father figure for them. So I sit down with them and said the same thing I just said. But also, you have to take care of your family. Forget about the money. The money is going to come if you perform. Yeah, it's going to be there. But use your motivation to help your family.
One of the things I noted in the book, along with what you're just talking about here, is that when you were in San Francisco, in a sense, you became your father because you were a little bit older then and you were working with young people and saying the kinds of things that your father had said to you.
Every day, yeah. Every single day I was helping somebody in San Francisco. I took my time. sometimes when I had a chance to watch the videos and become a better player, if you want to say it, I stopped that. Sometimes I became brother. Sometimes I became a father figure. Sometimes I became a friend and psychologist, you know, sometimes with those guys, because these guys were going, you know, crazy on the game and they didn't understand it. So I became their friend figure, and I help them out. You know, I help them go through the first years, which it was very tough. I got good mentors myself when Troy Percival helped me, Gary Anderson when I was there. They all helped me out, but and Socia. But when I saw these kids and everybody's worrying about their job, it's pretty scary, you know. Nobody's kind of helping, so I took the time.
And your brother helped you. He helped you perfect your movement to second to
yes.
second base.
Yes, my brother has been there for me my whole life. Mm-hmm. My brothers are so special to me. My brother could, they're all everything. When I was growing up, my dad said, take care of the house when I'm not here. Mm-hmm. Okay, you're in charge. And I took it very seriously. And I said, you know what? I don't want to do something that these guys, my brothers, are right behind me. How about if I do something scary or if I do something wrong and I get in jail or something? And they're right behind me. And I didn't want that. I took it very serious, and I wanted to make sure they follow me as a role model.
Yeah. Yadier, of course, is several years younger than you are. And we talked at the beginning about your recognition of the way fans here feel about him. How do you as a brother feel about his success?
Oh, I have so much pride. I feel so proud of him. Everybody here sees Yadi as a man, as a very successful baseball player in St. Louis. I see him as a five-year-old. I see him as a little kid, a seven-year-old. I see him as a 10-year-old having fun out there, running around the bases with no shirt on, diving head first at home. I feel so proud of who they became as a human being, not only as a player, because they were good, but as a human being.
How much older are you than Yadier?
It's probably like 8 years or so.
Yeah. So he was just a little kid when you were basically moving out of the house. I have some notes here that I just wanted to read to you. I watched the game the other day. It was Tim McCarver was part of the broadcast team. He called Yadi fearless, and he said McCarver called him one of the greatest ever to wear this uniform, and you know, definitely a candidate for the Hall of Fame.
Yes, in my heart he is. He is a Hall of Fame, even if he doesn't make it, because of the way he is as a person. Baseball is one thing, and he's done very good, as you guys know. Mm-hmm. But his way of being a human being out there, being so helpful to kids and having a great heart for others and helping people away from the game, that's what makes him a real Hall of Famer for me.
There is another connecting dots between you and St. Louis. Again, pointed out in the book that you were replaced as catcher with the San Francisco Giants by Mike Matheny.
Yes, and if you guys remember, the catcher that Yadi replaced here was Mike Matheny too. So
that's true. So these dots do connect to each other in baseball as well. Did your father live long enough to appreciate what you had achieved, what Jose had achieved, and Yadi being so much younger, what he was achieving?
Oh, of course. He enjoyed our 2002, which he was inducted the same day he was inducted to the Amateur Baseball Hall of Fame in Puerto Rico. Same day we won the Game 7 against the Giants. He enjoyed that game so much, and a lot of people said that he had a smile, the biggest smile ever, and I wish I could have seen it. But then later on, Yadi lost the World Series to Detroit, not Detroit or who?
Boston.
Boston, I'm sorry, 2004. Mm-hmm. But then the 2006 series, they won, and he was with us. But one little detail that was kind of shocking to me was, we've been in at least one Molina has been in the playoff for so many years, and then 2008, all three of us don't make it, and that's when he passed away in the October. But then right after 2009, Jose wins the World Series with the Yankees. 2010, I get a ring with the Giants with Texas, and then 2011, the Cardinals win the World Series here. I mean, it's like my dad was just taking care of us, like saying, here's some championships and I'll be fine.
He was quite young when he died. He simply had a heart attack and dropped dead, as I recall.
Yes, yeah. He was at the field that he built for the kids, and he was still coaching kids. He was in the middle of a doubleheader. He was looking for baseballs and then came back and dropped down.
Yeah, well, I guess if you have to go, that's probably the best way to
that's
go.
That's the best way.
But what a shock. What a shock to the Suns.
Oh, man. He broke our hearts in half. Not even half, even more. We have our hearts so hurting. I mean, still, you see, it was 2008, so many years ago, and I can still live it today like it was yesterday. Mm-hmm. So our dad, man, he'll be in our hearts forever, of course.
And he's up there watching, as you've indicated, and maybe helping out a little bit from time to time.
Yeah, hopefully.
You know, you've mentioned a number of times the rings. And I get the impression, hearing baseball players talk about the rings, that the rings are almost as important as any other part of it, just having that ring. Talk about that for a moment.
I think every player that you will talk to will tell you, and they will mention this the same way I did. Everybody wants to win at least one time and say that you were a champion. You experienced that. Obviously, we all know that that's not the case. Not many players got to live that dream. But for us to be able to do it twice and for each do it twice, it's a special feeling. But I want people to understand that's what we play for. It's a ring. And not only because of us, it's because the whole team. Every year, the team is special. It has something different than last year. You know, and it will be different from the year coming up. So for us, it's about our teammates, about our coaches, and we want to get a ring and for the town.
You have daughters. Your daughter's name,
Jada.
Jada, that's right. I'm thinking Yadi mm-hmm. and Melina. Jada is very young, but who knows? You know, maybe by the time she's a little bit older, girls will be playing professional baseball.
Hopefully.
With the guys.
I wouldn't mind it, you know, and she's very athletic. I have two older daughters, Kitchley and Kelsey. One is 20 and the other one's 16. And they play softball, and they were very good at softball in high school. Mm-hmm. They stopped, you know, obviously they stopped playing. But Jada is very, very talented, and she's a good tennis player. She I'm sure she can play soccer. She loved running. So, we'll see what happened with that. I mean, that'll be nice to see.
Maybe one of these days she'll hit 20 home runs. As you point out, you did that one season, and that was another big moment for you.
That was a huge moment. My dad said to me that the year before he passed away, he said that I could do 20 if I wanted to. And I said, Dad, I don't think I'm a 15 homer guy. He goes, no, I think you can do 20. You know, I really do believe it. Pull some balls and stay with your approach and pull some more, and you'll see. And sure enough, that year, obviously, after he passed away, he didn't get to enjoy it. But for me, it was an achievement that it was a dream after he said it. It was kind of like a dream, and then it became true, you know?
You've had many dreams come true thanks to baseball. Benji Molina, thank you so much for being with us. Congratulations on the book. Again, I read it and I enjoyed it, and I would certainly recommend it. And I'll remind folks that we'll be together tonight at 7 o'clock at the County Library, where you'll be taking more questions from yours truly and also signing books. And Wednesday, June 3rd at 5 o'clock at Left Bank Books on Euclid, tomorrow at the ballpark where you'll be taking that first pitch.
Thank you so much for having me.
It's been great having you, great meeting you, and again, congratulations on all that you've accomplished. So we'll be back in just a moment and talk about what was accomplished or not accomplished during this Illinois legislative session. That coming up in just a moment. This is St. Louis on the Air on St. Louis Public Radio 90.7 KWMU.